I think that's right. And I also want to add, besides all the good things that we associate with a good life, there are also the challenges that we all experience. So again, 91% of this Harvard sample served in the military, many of them in combat positions, came back from the war with significant trauma and the experience of processing that event. Now, young folks born today in Western countries may be less likely to have that kind of exposure to war, but there are other challenges that we have that
Sure.
this generation is facing. So one of the lessons from studying people across these 9 decades is that the challenges that we think are rare are actually pretty common in people's lives. It's the way that we meet those challenges that's the critical piece. Some of them might be societal challenges, like the recent pandemic, and some of them might be challenges that are just unique to us, a particular health scare or a family challenge that we have. But one key idea, I think, Phil, to interject here is we spent some time before we wrote The Good Life, thinking about the study and the hundreds of papers that it's produced and the more than 15 books that had come out before our own book, and thinking whether there was some general lesson that can be taken from this study of 87 years, but also across generations. And the lesson was pretty clear because of the number of findings that suggested the following. It's really simple to summarize. It's relationships that keep us healthier and happier throughout the lifespan. This was true in 1938. This is true in 2025. It was true when the participants went to war and they were in foxholes, depending on the person next to them for their life and also for their emotional well-being. So the research really points fairly clearly, our own research and also the thousands of other studies that we reviewed for our book, points to the importance of connection or partnership, as you might talk about it.
Sure. And so I would love to piggyback off the back of that into the idea of people being connected. And the, you know, I often hear the concept of a loneliness epidemic that we seem to find ourselves in for a whole range of different points of view, whether it be devices, technology, whatever else that we could talk about. I wonder when you think about, you know, that causality being so strong. When you are trying to help somebody understand, maybe in a personal or even in a business context, how to build a muscle around, or at least an appetite to build those close relationships, which of course take time and can be truncated if you're put in a situation where things are a little bit more dire. Being ex-military, I understand what you mean around, you know, when you serve with people and you go through hardship together, relationships can be formed extremely quickly with a very high degree of intensity. And they persevere for a very long time afterwards. And many will be able to talk to that. I wonder when somebody is unlikely to go through that, maybe like you said before, today's generation may not have to face into that, although many have. How do you think about coaching them into thinking about the power of relationship when maybe in their life to date, they haven't had that many close relationships or experience about how to go about doing that?
Yeah, I think it's such an important question. I teach, you know, I'm a professor, I've been teaching in a university for over 30 years, and students today are really thinking a lot about their connection to others. Many of them feel quite alone, as you suggest, and which means that they don't feel like other people have their back or really know who they are. So they struggle with this. And I think it's partly a consequence of the pandemic and some of the other issues like technology that you've talked about. So really important to talk about it. You had a metaphor there about flexing our social muscles, and that's a metaphor that I think is quite appealing. We talk about it as social fitness, that the first important idea is if we know, and we do know this, that connections are critical for our physical well-being and our emotional well-being, we need to figure out a way to exercise those social muscles. They're really critical. And we need to lean in just as we do for physical fitness, just as we get ourselves to walk when we're tired or to go to the gym when we have other things to do. We need to think about ways to improve our connections to others. And that means our connections to people we care about. It might be coworkers or people that are important to us in work or in personal relationships, family, friends, neighbors. It's all the connections that we have in our life. Rather than let them go on autopilot, we need to be much more forward thinking and proactive in thinking about what can I do now to improve those connections, both the close ones and the distant ones. So the first step is really taking a much more proactive, intentional approach, stepping back and thinking a little bit, just like you would before you go to the gym. What are the kinds of things in relationships or the connection world that I need to work on? So if it's in the workplace, you know, how am I doing in terms of mentoring junior people that I supervise? Am I really interested in their whole person, or am I just worried about getting this project done? Could I do better on that front? Am I showing interest and curiosity about the people that I work with, genuine interest? Am I able to put away the deadlines that are hovering around in my head and the phone that's interrupting me all the time and look at a person when I'm talking to them and be really interested in what they have to say? So, you know, attention to social connections and then building those muscles by being present, being curious, interested in the other person. I think in reality, it's sort of simple. You know, all of us want to be seen and heard and understood. It's a very simple thing, but it's not easy in today's world to be able to experience that when people are so distracted. So if we can be present, curious, and interested in them, show people some respect and a recognition maybe that differences that we have can be exciting and interesting as opposed to threatening, I think those are pretty important steps to improving connections in the world at large.
I remember having a very a strange experience with one of our country's leading journalists. His name is Ray Martin. And we had an opportunity to spend a lot of time together on a project. And I will never forget how, when we were talking one-on-one, he had such a singular focus on everything that I was saying, a deep curiosity. It was like the whole world could have fallen apart around us and he wouldn't have flinched. And it was because, and it could be his training as a journalist. We didn't want to miss something, but it felt like a much deeper muscle that he'd created to want to not miss, almost a fear of missing out on a genuine perspective.
And what does that feel like for you as the recipient of that stare, right? That's the interesting thing.
Extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, right? I mean, yeah.
It was, and I'll never forget it. And it was, for every opportunity I can do that, the exercise was to not peer at somebody with sort of an open kind of stare, but more to sort of just be so curiously into what's going on. And it's really interesting how much more rich those relationships become, because you're right, the other person feels it in a way that's like, I don't get this kind of attention.
Yeah.
Very much.
We did some research years ago. This is Bob Waldinger and I, and we studied married couples and we followed them very closely. We brought them into the lab and we had them talk about a difficult topic. And we asked them to report. They watched their videotape of the interaction. We asked them to report on what their emotions were at specific times during that videotape. And then we asked them, it's a kind of empathy task. We asked them what they imagined their partner was thinking. And it turned out that it was less important whether they got it right or not, what their partner was thinking, but it was critical that their partner thought they were trying to understand them. That was the key to understanding their happiness in that marriage. So I think you're right, Phil. One of the secrets is we can listen intently and we may not get it all. We may misunderstand something, but people experience that listening as a gift. They feel kind of heard and seen in a way that, frankly, is quite unusual in today's modern world where we're rushing around and we don't give people our attention.